I'm Susan LeVay for Women's Focus, and today I'm talking to Abigail Lannon Eves, and we're talking about her experience as director of a clinic, Dar Alouz Birth and Health Center. Before we talk about what your current experiences are and how things are doing there, let's just tell people what kind of a place it is and how it's different from a hospital for giving birth. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So Dar Alouz is a freestanding birth center, so we're not affiliated with any hospitals per se. It's run by certified nurse midwives and registered nurses. We do all the care. And it's designed for low-risk women who want to give birth in an out-of-hospital setting and for some reason don't want to give birth at home, either because it's not covered or they don't have the right home environment, or they want something kind of in between the hospital and home. But we do have very clear criteria about who can come to the birth center, who qualifies, and we have very clear clinical practice guidelines about who can continue in our care, because we do transfer out a fair number of people for all sorts of reasons.
Okay. I think part of what's important is that women don't just go there to give birth, they have an experience there, and that they have experience with you before the actual birth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some random person can't just show up and be ready to have a baby. I mean, if a situation like that happened, we would take care of it, but we would transfer to the hospital as soon as we can. But we do want pregnant people to come and start their care with us as soon as they're ready. So about 50% of our mamas come in the first trimester when they're newly pregnant, and I would say about 50% transfer in at some point during their pregnancy from another practice, and usually from a hospital-based practice. We have a lot of classes that people are required to take, and that's all really important for having a successful out-of-hospital birth and for early discharge, because we send families home usually within about 4 hours after they've given birth.
It must be that they are in a hospital and or they're working with a hospital, and they decide that they want something else, and so they come to you and look for you.
Yes, yeah. And sometimes it's, as they're talking to their providers, you know, they're talking about that they want a natural birth, or, you know, without intervention, or they want a water birth. And many of the other certified nurse midwives in the hospital-based practices will tell them about us and refer them over to us, and some of the physicians will as well. And that's how a lot of them find us.
And how long have you been in operation?
We've been open just over 9 years now.
Okay. So a long time, actually.
Yeah.
I think the way that I first heard about you was that Giovanna Rossi had a baby there.
Yes, she did. And in our very first year.
Oh, it was the first year. Oh, wow. That's
mm-hmm.
great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I knew about it. And she was excited about her experience there.
I hope so. I mean, it was a lovely birth. I was there.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Well, I was interested recently what you posted about your experience and how you've had to make adaptations, as everyone has, for
mm-hmm.
the virus that is going around, and how mm-hmm. everyone is trying to be as protected and as healthy as possible because of the virus. So
mm-hmm.
just tell us a little bit about what your experience has been.
Yeah, so within a couple of weeks of the shutdown here in New Mexico, my staff and I came up with policies. There were hard choices to make, but we felt like we had to do it really for my staff and for the mothers and fathers and baby safety as well. But we implemented full personal protective equipment for the midwives and the nurses during birth. So gowns, face shields or goggles, an N95 mask, and gloves. Of course, we always wear gloves. But then we also implemented surgical masks for the laboring pregnant person and their partner, and a doula, if they had a certified doula with them. And that was a really hard decision to make, and I think we were pretty early in making that decision. Other hospitals weren't doing that. There were other birth centers in the country who had already started having their pregnant moms wearing masks during labor. The main thing for me was an article I read about a group of choir singers that got together in Washington in mid-March, and 45 out of 60 of those choir singers got sick or tested positive with COVID-19 over the next few weeks, and none of them had symptoms when they went to their choir practice. And so there was pretty good information there about asymptomatic transmission and aerosolization. And that was really the thing for me that made me realize we have to protect our staff. We're such a small staff. We're only 13 clinical people. So I've got 5 nurses and 7 nurse midwives. And if only 2 of my nurses or, you know, 2 or 3 of my midwives get sick at the same time, we wouldn't be able to manage the number of clients that we have, and we would have to close. And that's really, that was the number one thing. It's really important for us to stay open. I think it's really important for our clients to continue to get this care and for us to accept other clients as we have room. And then also, being that any one of us could be an asymptomatic carrier, that we're protecting the moms and babies as well. And again, it was a hard decision, but in some ways it was really a no-brainer for me, being such a small practice that we have.
Did you have any opposition from the caregivers that you work with?
No, not my caregivers. They were all very understanding, and while they knew that it was going to be hard for some of our pregnant moms, they, I think, completely agreed with me. I didn't get any pushback from my staff.
Was there any kind of sense of we ought to just shut down, it's too dangerous, or it's too difficult?
No. No. We've been really, really lucky. I have a staff of 20, including myself, and I've had 2 of my staff members get sick. Nobody has tested positive, but 2 had had symptoms, but both were what I considered non-essential right now, meaning they weren't in the clinic at all. They were 2 of my instructors. And as soon as school shut down, we went straight to having our classes over Zoom, having virtual classes for our pregnant families. So none of my clinical staff or my office staff have been sick at all, even since this has happened. And if we had seen, you know, several of us getting sick, it might have been different, but we've all been very healthy. And I, again, feel like it's really important for us to stay open. And I think also really important to kind of lead the way on how community birth can actually be safer in some ways and can put these sorts of things, we can implement them faster. We don't have all the red tape and the bureaucracy that has to, you have to get through in, you know, a hospital setting or a large setting like that. So I think it was valuable for us to lead the way and show, hey, we can still have really safe birth and safe places for people to come and not have transmission here, because we're kind of leading the way in safety on how to keep this from spreading.
Well, then, as you said in your post, you did have some negative reaction from some of the clients.
Mm-hmm. Yes, some of our clients, right when we announced it, were pretty upset. And some of those women were due at that time. You know, they were going to have a baby any day. And I can understand. I've had 2 babies myself, that wearing a surgical mask or any mask might feel suffocating. There's so much sensation, obviously, in a labor, and especially an unmedicated labor. But I think when I presented the information to them and why, they understood it, and they understood it logically, and they still, some of them were upset, and I still have a few who are upset and who are feeling very anxious about it. And, you know, we're just doing our best to kind of individualize our care for each of them and just to really explain it to them. And we've made it clear to them that they need to keep their masks on when we are in the room, and when we're not in the room, they can take them off during labor. And that seems to be helping them. And we're all just doing the best we can.
Are there any of them that want you not to wear the protection that you're wearing?
No, they're perfectly fine with us wearing the protection. It's they don't want to wear the masks themselves. I mean, nobody has said anything to us about what we're wearing. And the experience that I wrote about, that you read about on Facebook, you know, was one of those, it was a particularly long labor and long pushing stage. and she was probably pretty close to being transferred to the hospital, but she was still making progress, and she and her baby were both doing really well physically. And I just was so mindful about making sure that my eyes were, and that I was giving her lots of feedback verbally, and that my eyes were giving her lots of feedback, positive feedback, because she couldn't see my face otherwise.
I especially noticed that in what you posted about your eyes, and how I think you said she kept searching your eyes to make sure that she was making progress.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it was...
that was dramatic.
Yeah, and I really understood. You know, I've been doing this for almost 18 years, and I have never stopped learning. And what I learned there was just how important that not just the verbal guidance is, but the facial expressions that we make and the other cues, the nonverbal cues that we're giving them. And there was another midwife in the room with me and one of my nurses, and the mother was scanning, you know, the three of us. She would look at me, and then she would look over at them to make sure that they were in agreement with me, that she was making progress and that things were going okay. And so I realized just how important it was for us to really soften our eyes and think about the expressions that we're making when we smile, which is often raising our eyebrows and just kind of relaxing our eyes a bit and softening them as well. I thought about that a lot.
And so how long after that time was it before she gave birth?
How long
were you sort of expressing yourself through your eyes?
It was almost 3 hours.
Oh, boy.
I was in the room. Yeah, she pushed for a total of 6 hours. It was long, and it was longer than we would normally do at the birth center. You know, we kept her longer than we normally would, partly because of the virus and partly because she was making progress, though it was slow. It was there, and because looking at the whole picture, she and her baby were doing very well. There were no signs of distress in the baby. There were no signs of any instability in the mother. And I could feel and I could see that she was making progress, and it was not an issue of whether the baby would fit. It was an issue of a very tight pelvic musculature, and I felt really confident we would be able to get that baby out there.
And I assume that it was successful.
Very successful. Absolutely wonderful. Baby and mom did fantastic, and they're still doing fantastic.
And what did she say to you after it was all over?
You know, I think she mostly was just very, very thankful. And, I mean, she was just exhausted. And I think some of these, especially our first-time moms, when they have a labor like that, it takes them a while to process what they've done. But before I left, I peeked in the room and I said, I hope you are really proud of yourself. Mm. And she gave me this really sweet smile and she said, yes, I really am.
Oh,
and
that's wonderful.
That's the most important thing. Yeah.
I have read about some sort of idea of taking the babies away from the mothers just after they're born because one or the other might have the virus.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been anything that you've been thinking about?
No, everything I've read about that is specifically around women who have tested positive for the virus. And I think this is happening in our local hospitals, excuse me, and nationally. And I think women are really fighting back about this. If we had a woman who was symptomatic at the time of labor, or a person under investigation, as we call it, so somebody who is tested but doesn't have their results back, we would actually transfer her to the hospital. So we have maintained that we are a healthy environment, and if somebody is sick, we're going to have to transfer. That's just the safest thing for mom and baby, but we are not separating. We don't plan to separate at all.
And what do you think about that practice? Is it something that just can't be avoided?
So I think this is the really tricky part, and the part of this that we're going to be learning about in the months to come is really the asymptomatic transmission. And, you know, we have asymptomatic transmission of viruses all the time, just nothing that in my lifetime that has been so virulent and has kind of taken off like wildfire. But the way that I view coronavirus right now is kind of like we're all positive, and some of us are going to show no symptoms ever. Some of us are going to be mild and not even think about it. Some of us will be moderate, and some of us will get very, very sick, and some of us will die. And the reason I'm taking that view is so that I am as safe as I can be when I go out and when I'm interacting with people. I've been wearing a mask out in public for 3 weeks, you know, the hand washing, the hand sanitizing, and then being around families and staff when I have to go to work. And with that being said, I don't think that separating moms and babies is really, it's not evidence-based right now. It's fear-based. And I also understand that in wanting to protect newborns because they don't have the immunity, but none of us have the immunity. I think there are ways that we can protect newborns by mothers wearing personal protective equipment. Of course, if you have a mother in the hospital who is very sick, that's different. But I think if we go by the assumption that everybody is positive, then we should be mindful about how we are holding our babies all the time, that we are always practicing good hand washing, that our family members are practicing good hand washing, and that we are continuing with social distancing until, especially around newborns, until we really understand more about it. But I don't see that in other countries they've been separating moms and babies the way that we have. And our pendulum in this country around maternal and newborn health, I think, sometimes swings the wrong direction. That's how I feel that this one is swinging right now. And, you know, and then we're sending people home and very quickly. And I think it's a real disservice to mother-baby dyad to separate them instead of proceeding with caution, I guess.
So are you telling new mothers that they should wear masks with their babies when they go home?
We are not right now. No, according to what I just said, that kind of feeling like everybody is positive. I don't think, you know, we wear masks so that we're not inhaling other people's droplets, basically. So we are having family members wear masks if they're having any symptoms. So if, let's say somebody's gone home, they're feeling fine, and 3 days later they call us and they say, well, I've got a cough and a runny nose, we would tell them, you know, to really try to protect themselves, wear a mask, wash their hands very well, and watch them really closely for symptoms.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking to Abigail Lannon Eves, and we're talking about her experience as a birthing center, as the head of a birthing center. Can you talk a little bit for our listeners who may have forgotten about some of the special sort of health effects that are in place with birth? What I'm thinking about is mothers are able during normal pregnancies to convey some protections against certain diseases and things like that, as I remember.
Yeah, I mean, I think at a time like this, breastfeeding is incredibly important for lots of different reasons. Not everybody wants to breastfeed. Not everybody is able to breastfeed, and I certainly understand that. I think we know that some breastfeeding is better than none, and we've detected antibodies in breast milk for the coronavirus. And so I think that's a really important thing to do, even if you don't want to do long-term breastfeeding at this time. You know, other than that, I think, you know, the things that we normally recommend, which we've always recommended, you wash your hands before you feed a baby, whether it's a bottle or a breast. That's always good hygiene for feeding. You should wash your hands before you feed yourself, you know. And I think this has brought into our consciousness that we really should be doing that all of the time. And being really mindful again about, you know, how germs spread. How this virus spreads is no different than how most viruses spread, especially upper respiratory viruses. Again, it just goes a little bit like wildfire and we have no immunity to it.
The other thing that occurs to me is that this is a time of so much anxiety and mental difficulties about dealing with isolation and dealing with mm-hmm. not knowing the future and fear, as you had mentioned. Mm-hmm. And it must be quite a moving experience to give birth in the middle of that sort of anxiety. It mm-hmm. must be really moving, both for the mothers who do it and for the fathers too, and for you as caregivers and helpers.
Mm-hmm. For me in particular, you know, other than wearing all the protective equipment, it's still really important for me as a midwife to be a witness for a family during birth. I'm pretty non-interventive unless I have to be, and it hasn't changed really how I support women, except like as we talked about before, you know, making sure I'm really using my eyes and doing lots of verbal guidance and verbal feedback. I'm really trying to focus on the positive things right now and sharing that with our clients and with my staff, and really focusing on what we have control of. You know, we don't have control over how this virus is going to keep going in terms of shutdowns and social distancing, and really trying to be thankful for the things that we have in front of us and the things that we do have control over, and just having a lot of intention with the things we have. A lot of families choose to come to us because they often fear that they won't have any control in a hospital setting, which I think is true in a lot of cases. And we have lots of women who choose to come to us because they want to be able to make lots of different choices for their healthcare, as it should be. So this is really hard for a lot of those women, the unknowns. And so we just try to really focus on the knowns, which in some ways is also tricky in childbirth, because the most perfect labor, the most healthy person can come in and something can change very, very quickly, and we have to transfer to a hospital and an ambulance. It doesn't happen very often, but it happens. And so I've always kind of practiced out of not fear, but ready for the unknown, ready for that thing to happen, because it's important not to get complacent about it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's kind of what I'm trying to share with people, is let's be thankful for the things that we have and the things that we can control, and then kind of open ourselves up a little bit more to the possibility of unexpected circumstances, which I've always encouraged our clients to do. Because again, you never know if you're going to transfer for some really strange reason out of the blue. Anybody who's a parent would say that, you know, decreasing your expectations about how parenthood is going to go is a pretty important thing, because things are very different when you have a little one around and you realize who's boss at that point.
Yes. For a long time.
Uh-huh.
What would be your advice if you were deciding whether to become pregnant right now? Would you mm-hmm. sort of hesitate because of the uncertainties of what our experience is?
It's a really good question.
What would you tell people?
Yeah, I've had a few people, you know, previous clients who've asked me what I think about getting pregnant right now. It's kind of a hard question, because that is not something that I want at all for myself. So I'm like, no, don't do it. But, you know, I think it's probably pretty safe right now to get pregnant. We don't have really any good data that there's been vertical transmission between mom and baby. So that's where a baby has gotten COVID from the mom through the placenta. I've only heard of one, and that's been in a later pregnancy. We won't know for a while if there are issues if somebody gets pregnant and then gets coronavirus in the first trimester. We don't have that data yet, and that will start to emerge over the next few months to year. In some ways, it's kind of a nice time to be thinking about getting pregnant. If you're home with your partner, things maybe aren't quite as stressful in some ways. If you're working from home, you're not kind of under all the daily routines that you had to be before. So there's more time, I think, to connect with your partner. It's kind of a nice thing. For some people who've been trying to get pregnant for a while, sometimes the act of, you know, having intercourse is a very time thing. Like, I know I'm ovulating, we have to do this right now. And when you have two people who are working 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, that feels sometimes like another job. And so this can be a time where maybe it's a little bit more playful, You get that oxytocin going, and it can be maybe hopefully more fun. So again, trying to focus on the positives. This is a time where, you know, I hope in our lifetime we never have to have another pandemic. But again, I'm really trying to be very intentional with my time with my loved ones and really making that time count, really trying to connect with them. And it's, you know, kind of a nice time to get pregnant, I guess. Not for me, for other people.
Well, thank you. Thank you for giving the advice, and thank you for the experience that you're offering women. It's wonderful to know that there are different choices that women can make when they're giving birth.
We do have women who travel in from all over the place, from neighboring states, Colorado, Texas, Kansas, and we've had people who've come intentionally as far as Africa, if you can believe it, but not right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it must be very heartening to you to be able to do that.
It is. This, I learned about birth centers when I was in midwifery school, and I just had this very strong sense that this was what I was going to do for the majority of my career, and I've been lucky to have the support to do it, and I am so proud of Dada Luz, and I'm so proud of my staff. I have an amazing group of women who just have continued to follow me as I lead my way, and sometimes I feel like I have a really bright light as I'm leading, and sometimes not much at all, and they still follow me, and then just such an amazing community around us who trusted us to come and have their babies with us. What a beautiful and glorious thing that is. So I'm overwhelmed with gratitude.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us, and I'm sure our listeners will find a little touch of something to be heartening to them also from hearing of your experience.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.